Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Twyla Dang, producer and co-host of the Small Change Podcast, and this is NPR News. This hour, it's In Focus, Sustainability in Indian Country. We started with introductions. Now, normally I would do an introduction where I read a bio and bring everybody up to the stage and we would start to talk. But in our prep work for this, we found some really wonderful cultural traditions around how community is acknowledged and how people acknowledge each other. And we wanted to make that center stage even in our introductions. So I'm going to turn the introductions over to our esteemed guests today so they can introduce themselves. And you'll understand what I mean when I bring them up. So let's start with Hope Flanagan.
When I do my introduction, I'm letting not just the humans know, but the spirits know, and all the living beings, the Niji Bimadizik that are around that may be listening, the unseen ones, but the plants, the trees, the little ants, all of them, they know that I'm trying to speak for them and have a voice for them. So I said, my name is Little Wind Woman in Ojibwe. My clan is Snapping Turtle Clan. I'm from Tonawanda Reservation. And right now I'm working at Dream Wild Health. It's an indigenous farm in the Twin Cities area.
Thank you so much. And next we have Leah Lem.
Hi, Buju, Anin. I'm Leah Lem, Leah Lem Indigenakaz, Buju Ndudam, Mizaga, Iganing, and Dunjaba. I'm a citizen of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. I live in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, along the Prairie River, close to the Mississippi River. And I was born and raised in the Twin Cities. I'm a mom, I'm a spouse, and a community story sharer where I share Native voices via podcasts and radio.
Thank you, Leah. And we also have Ruben Keto Stately.
Oh, Midakiapi, Ruben Amakiapi, Gamaza Aditi Hemie, Emanija Sky Machachet, Kawana, Shakpe, Otunwed, Wati, Damakota, Kahantua Hemacha, Breshao Yate, Hemataha, Gai Santi Hemataha, Breshao Yate, Omawapi, and Augsburg University at Wabadawado. So how's it going, everyone? My name is Ruben Keto Stately. I am a Knife Camp Dakota from what we call Isanti Nation in Nebraska. And Breshao Yate, I said that twice. I was saying that I come from Red Lake. My ancestry is from Red Lake, but I'm enrolled there, is what I was communicating. And I go to Augsburg University. I am a senior here. I'm a fourth year in college. And I am an intern for the Dakota Iyapi Okota Kichie, and I work with them at their nonprofit to make Dakota language curriculum and language materials.
Thank you all for that wonderful, for those wonderful introductions. I want to jump right into the discussion. So we know we're talking about sustainability today, and one of the things that came up in sort of my pre-work is that I had a very, and I would say maybe many of us had a very limited idea of what sustainability looks like in a conversation like this. But talking to you kind of opened it up to me in that I feel like we're going to be able to have a very different discussion than we would normally have, and without nearly as many limitations. So I want to start right away, and I want everyone to answer this question, but we're going to start with Hope. What does sustainability mean to you?
I go back to the historic vision of sustainability, where we think about everything is related, everything is connected. So sustainability is nurturing not just human life, but all life, the life that the little organisms in the soil, those are our relatives. And now science is finding out that's absolutely true, that the same ones that are in the soil have to be the same ones that are in our gut so we can process our food. So I think humans, we in our traditional legends, we're told that the humans are the last ones here. and we're the kind of foolish babies because we're the youngest ones, and we tend to get all egotistical and forget that we're so connected to each and every life form, and they're precious to us. And in our old way of thinking, we had to always remember our place of that each and every living being is critical. I can't produce food. I can't produce oxygen. I have to look to the plant world, to the animal world, to the microcosms, the little microbiomes around us. So in our old way, when we always recognize who's come first, Mother Earth, of course, the creator, all of the ancient ones that are in the sky world, they come first. And we think of them and then remember who we are, that we're just a little tiny piece of this. And our job is to learn from our elders, the animals, the plants. We need to learn from them to see how to live in harmony with this earth. If not, we're in danger of toppling off.
Leah, how do you view sustainability?
Yeah, thank you, Twyla. And thank you, Chimigwech Hope. I think Hope, every time I hear Hope talk, I'm just always so, I just have this wonderful feeling inside me, inside my heart. And to hear about us talk about the significance of relationships and sustainability for me, as first of all, as an Ojibwe woman and as a Minnesotan, really echoes exactly what Hope is talking about, relationships with one another, relationships with our environment and language and our animals and plant relatives, and maintaining those relationships that benefit and support us all. But also, more specifically, in my line of work as a community story sharer and media creator, where I serve in a manner to uplift Native voices in Minnesota, I have a certain perspective of sustainability that extends and expands on what we just talked about. So relationships really being central, commonly media can be extractive, which is in conflict with our values of having those reciprocal, healthy relationships. So when I say extractive, I mean like media covering our communities when it'll get ratings or when something's trending. I don't know. I think it's called if it bleeds, it leads. But so I think the way that we treat our stories parallels how we treat our environment and our people. Are we being extractive? Are we being one-sided? Power and money, influence seeking, or are we humbling ourselves to where we understand that each of us has something to offer, a gift, wisdom to share? So sustainability is maintaining and nurturing relationships with our relatives and our environment and with our stories too.
That's beautiful. Ruben?
Yeah, I really like the conversation that we're having about our ideas as Indigenous people of sustainability. But one of the things that I heard a lot of is scientifically, you know, because we talked about scientifically, we are related. And De Dakota Yapi, we say, Midakuye Wasin, when we finish a prayer, and we're talking about, I am related to everything. Everyone is my relative. But it's saying that everything the Creator made is my relative. I'm related to those stars in the sky. I'm related to those that swim, those that crawl, you know, I'm related to this earth, these stones, the water. You know, when you treat things like relatives, that's how you, you know, you live in harmony with those things. How do you treat them if you treat them like a relative, you know? So that's kind of like when you ask us about sustainability, that's what I think of, that Dakota or Indigenous like way of thinking. And, but one of the other ways I think of sustainability, you know, is, how are we, oral, We never wrote things. We started writing them in the last like 200 years. We started writing things down. But how did we sustain this knowledge, philosophy, stories, language, culture? We had a strong oral tradition. We have a strong interrelatedness and way of interacting with each other where we sustained a lot for all this time. So to me, I think when I think of sustainability, one of the ways I think of sustainability is the way we can retain knowledge and keep it real, and what values helped us do that. You know, in the Dakota Yapi, we say like Owotana, like tell it straight. You don't leave anything out. You don't add new things. You just tell it how it is, and that's how we keep it intact.
I think that's wonderful. And it actually leads me, hopefully very easily, to talking about this next question. I would really like to hear about how sustainability impacts your work and the intersection of sustainability with your work. Let's start with you, Leah.
Thank you, Twyla. So sustainability intersecting with my work, I think we think of sustainability as oftentimes in mainstream society as being something else to integrate into our work or to integrate into our culture or something else outside that we need to strive for. Whereas I believe through work and through culture and embracing culture in my work is already weaving in that the idea of the foundational aspect of how we have sustainability in our culture already. So like we just talked about with prioritizing relationships and community, that's just at its core what the work is built upon. So that being said, there's also ways of talking about sustainability as far as environmental sustaining our language or the language sustaining us. And that just fits into my work on so many levels. So I talk with folks about connection to land, connection to language and community, and how we can share our gifts with our communities in order to keep our communities healthy and our definition of success, of successful. So that's kind of the basic ways that sustainability is related to my work.
I'm excited to dig a little bit more into the idea of success. You had some really great thoughts, and I want to definitely get into those. Hope, can you talk to me a little bit about how sustainability intersects with your work?
I work at the Dream of Wild Health Farm. It's a 10-acre farm, and we just got an additional 20 acres to encourage young people and young farmers to learn how to produce food. So I'm always thinking about, well, how do we sustain the soil? How do we keep it? How do we regenerate it? Because looking at the other society, the outside world, we see a lot of things really struggling. We see the water struggling. We see the soil struggling. We see the climate struggling. So we have to think about that we're impacted by that. I mean, certainly this summer, I was impacted by that when we had teenagers out there working in the farm when there was no rain and it was 90 degrees for such a large period of time. Always remembering that those plants are just as alive as we are and our food system is just as alive as we are, and they need that clean water, clean air, clean food. They need the same things that we need to thrive. So one of our old teachings was you always have to think that everything you do affects the next seven generations. So what do I do today that's going to affect the next seven generations? If I can speak for the plants, if I can say, gee, please, let's respect these plants. Let's do whatever we can to keep our water clean. Let's do whatever we can to help Mother Earth get into some kind of balance, because if she rolls in her sleep or, you know, as we change things around her, things are going to change for us. It's undeniable and it's so clear. One of the things I do on a daily basis is I'm out in the woods collecting plants and medicines for people. So I do see changes. So my thing is to be thankful every day. So when you express your gratitude to the water, put down your offerings, say thank you to the water, say thank you to the plants that put up with our human silliness, but always be mindful about how we treat that life that is around us.
I hope I can. I always have so much impact when you talk. I'm so glad that you're here. Ruben, when we talked a little bit in the pre-conversation about sustainability, it struck me how what Hope said about the future generations, and you're such a beautiful example of future generations working in action. Can you talk to me about the sustainability in your work?
Yeah, so the sustainability in my work as a Dakota Iapi Okoda Kichie intern, and I'm also an intern for the Bidote Learning Center. So I work alongside a fluent speaker, Carol Charging Thunder, and she's very great. But I wanted to say that Leah, she dropped a gem when she was talking, and she said that the like language sustainability, and then she also said how the language sustains us as a people. And I was sitting here snapping like whatever, because that's exactly how I feel. So to me, I think outside of our world, I feel like when people talk about a language, they use it as a means to just communicate with each other and get something across. You know, you're navigating Paris, it's good to know French, maybe, like, you know, people kind of like that's they view language as this two-dimensional thing. If you are Dakota and this is your mother tongue, it speaks to you different. When you speak it, it's different. And so to me, the sustainability for my work is that when we're speaking, thinking, dreaming, philosophizing, making original thoughts in Dakota, that we are, how far are we, like, because like people like to use this word today of like decolonizing, but like to me, I'd rather say indigenizing. But like how far are you from colonial thought when you're not even thinking in English anymore? That's what I feel like. Well, that's how I feel about the sustainability in my work. And so like the Dakota Apio Kota Kichie, one of our missions is to create a generation of speakers who think, dream, philosophize in Dakota language, in Dakota Yapi. So, and then I recently was talking to one of my mentors, non-native. He's a black scholar, and he was talking to me, and I was telling him about the work I do. And he said, you know what I'm hearing from you? It's that your native tongue, you guys have this psychology when you speak. So I've always thought, and it blew my mind, because to me, what we're doing, we're not just sustaining the language and how we have that interaction with each other, but we're sustaining our Dakota philosophy. We're sustaining our Dakota psychology, the way in which we think about each other. Like there's, you know, if you know any other language, it's not English. You realize how dull English is when we communicate. In Dakota, we say this one phrase. It's one of my favorite things to say, and I can't say it in English. Dayan Iukchan. Iukchan is like a weird word you can't really say. It's like kind of like the way you regard someone. Dayan Iukchanpo is like think of each other in a good way. You know, the way you think about each other. So to me, I feel like the sustainability, it comes in with sustaining the fabric, the actual, it's like, to me, it's like the social fabric and the psychological fabric of our people.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, because Ruben said it so beautifully when he's talking about the philosophy. And it really reminds me of something I thought was really interesting in the way that that you approach your work, Leah. You don't refer to yourself as a storyteller. Can you share, how do you refer to yourself and why?
Yeah, that's very intentional. I'm a community story sharer. I don't pretend to be able to tell anybody else's story. And I think that really goes towards the values of us as Native people being able to tell our own stories and having our own like sovereignty over how we approach that, and telling our stories and having it go through a filter and a lens and you know, different levels of editing and an editorial process in order to reach the ears and the hearts of our listeners, because I think that can skew the story at hand. So it is important for me to say that I'm a story sharer. I do try to keep intact as much as possible the stories that are shared with me to share out with everybody else. And yeah, I think that's basically the reason why I really focus on the sharing part. And that's another big value, I think, is sharing and reciprocity.
I deeply connected to that in terms of the way that I try to do work here that that gives other people voice. And I really love the way that you brought that. I love the way that you expressed that. Hope, I wanted to piggyback on that a little bit, because Ruben's talking about what happens, like when he mentions that how learning this language and knowing your language means that you can think outside of a colonial thinking. And you were sharing that you were motivated to learn your native language for a very particular reason. Can you share that story with us?
I was always helping with the plants with elders back in the day, and people would ask me to go fetch plants. And it wasn't that long ago, for example, this elder lady, she was an interpreter for elder Ojibwe people that couldn't speak any English, and they would ask for plants, and then she would tell me the name of the plant in Ojibwe, and then I'd have to figure out, like, oh, gee, I'm not absolutely sure what plant that is. And one time I had a dream, and dreams trump everything, so pay attention to your dreams. I had a dream about, I saw this tree full of eagles, and they were talking to me in Ojibwe, and I couldn't understand everything they were saying. I could understand very little of what they were saying. And so when I told her about that, she said, you have to learn the language because those plants are going to talk to you in the language. These are plants that have helped the people for thousands and thousands of years, and they're going to talk to you, and the spirits are going to talk to you. And, you know, if they're talking in Ojibwe, you have to know what they're saying. I want to address a little bit of what Leah was saying, too. In the Ojibwe language, you'll hear people say, Adazukanag, Adazuke Niniwag, Adazuke Kwewag. What that means is they are an official legend teller. And to tell legends or to sing songs, back when I was young, you definitely had to receive them from someone else. And you had to give a spiritual gift. Sometimes it was tobacco, blankets. You had to do the process of receiving a story to be able to do the story or to be able to sing the song. So for me, I was really fortunate that an elder lady from Panema, Ona Kingbird, passed on legends to me, and it was very community-based. It was in front of like 300 people, and then she said, you will tell these stories for the rest of your life. And there's legends to the people that were, you know, in the community, and I have to receive tobacco to tell the legends. So that's slightly different than, say, relating someone else's story. And I have the right to tell my own stories, but I don't, you know, like sometimes I can share other people's stories, but I want to make sure that I credit where I got my information.
I would really love to learn and share about what put you on the path. What brought you to the work that you do? How did you get started in this? I'm going to start with Ruben because I told him I put him on the spot today.
So as a young man, like little boy, my dad would go off to work, and my mom would, she was a stay at home mom when I was little. And, one of the first things I'd hear every day, be like, Diane, Ishtimahe, did you sleep good? Are you hungry? And I would, you know, my mom never had to explain what she's saying to me. I would always know through context. I had just woken up and she asked me this question. So, maybe she's asking how I slept. And then, every time she asks this one question, she cooks or she doesn't. So I don't know. I grew up in the, she would just ask me things, tell me things, command me to do things. And she spoke Dakota to me all for a long time, you know? And she nurtured this like Dakota headspace I had as a child. So I was around some older men when I wasn't a teenager yet. I was probably 10 or 11. And I started talking in the lodge with these men, and they were like really excited for me, and they just let me keep talking, and they were, and then they corrected me because in Dakota Yapi we have like some interrelational talking, or when you talk about yourself, or maybe when you have an interaction with someone where you place male and female speech, and it's actually just it's in the language to make sure that we're respectful to each other and ourselves. And anyway, I was speaking like my mother. I was speaking like a woman. And so these men, in a really good way, they just told me, Hey, you should say this when you're saying this, blah, blah, blah. And then I said, oh, okay. And then, but from then on, like them being excited for me is what made me think, oh wow, this isn't normal and whatever. And, you know, every time I learned words in Dakota, I felt, it enriched me, you know. I felt like a sponge. It always became something real to me. When you learn in school about things, like especially as a native child, it's like demeaning sometimes the way you learn things in school. They don't acknowledge your people. They don't say anything good about your people. And if they do say something about your people, they misinform you. And you got to tell them they're wrong or sit there and be ashamed. So I feel like every time I learned Dakota, it just locked in. Like, it didn't feel like, you know, and usually like me and my bros, when we talk about what the work that we do, we're saying like how we're remembering, we're re-remembering, and we're putting things back together that we inherently have, you know, as our language. So anyway, my mom is the reason why I speak Dakota and why I'm on this path. But there's some very good people I've met along the way that all helped me get to where I am right now, and you know, helped me on my journey as a language learner. I'm going to be a lifelong Dakota language learner, so I'll always be learning from here on out.
I love that. It makes me excited for you to see how passionately you speak about the pride that you have in it and the fact that you're going to continue to learn it. Leah, I'd love to pose the same question, because I know both of us as people who work to tell stories, I found it a really interesting way that you came about your work.
Sure. I am happy to share. And hearing Ruben's story too, Ruben, that's so wonderful to hear when you feel in your heart that you're on a good path. It's such a good signal to follow and honor. And I think that parallels a lot of what I feel as well. So, you know, we talked, Twyla, about just saying things plain.
Yep.
And I am all for it. I feel like being a panelist and a guest on NPR is actually a really great healing moment for me. I used to work at NPR. I worked at NPR for 7 or so years on the technology side of the operations. So big shout out to all the good folks working behind the scenes, because, you know, that's where a lot of the work happens too. So clap.
They make us look good.
Round of applause. So I spent many years behind the scenes, which was amazing, learning the ins and outs, right? And at the same time, in my position, I was listening to NPR APM's content programming literally my entire shift. Wonderful, wonderful conversations, wonderful programming. But I found it very few and far between when I'd hear native voices. And when I did, oftentimes they'd be the same ones over and over again. And this is true for a lot of major media outlets. So great to hear those voices, don't get me wrong, but native folks, we exist and thrive in so many spaces. We hold and carry so much expertise and cultural ways, academic, political, technical, all of it, just like every other population. So the more I listened, the more agitated I became, maybe antsy, but I didn't, you know, I didn't take that as a signal of, oh, I'm mad, right? I took it as a signal of there's work to be done. There's work that maybe I can do, right? And I really craved to hear voices that sounded like my family, to hear the insights, just like Hope and Ruben are sharing too, the insights, the brilliance and wisdom that comes from our communities. And I had a good conversation with my uncle, Amick Smallwood, back when he was alive. And I just remember sitting at a language table with him, and I asked him, like, what should I do? And he said that as Anishinaabe, I am to share my gifts with the community. That's like my marching orders. I share my gifts, not just in a philanthropic sense, but, you know, if I have a jacket or something and somebody else needs a jacket, like, I am to share what I have. But also I am to share my gifts, my joys, my talents with the community. And so I found that to be a really great lesson. And so I set off and I studied all aspects of storytelling. That was about 6 years ago now, through poetry and theater and documentary making. And I got my first job opportunity to really dig in with Native media as a reporter with Minnesota Native News. And since then, we've added Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine. We have a lot of great pandemic coverage on how Indian country is responding and adapting to the pandemic. So I really just like jumped in and started doing the work and having great conversations, centering Native voices, with creating shows with foundationally my values as a Native person, because I don't want to treat us like a monolith because they're all very unique, of course. Mm-hmm. And so creating shows based on my values. So I actually put down, like Hope was talking about, putting down tobacco offerings, burn my sage. And I have this like particular approach to even conceptualizing what a program is going to look like. So, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, we started pandemic coverage. I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't know how this is going to look. So I'm like, well, what's the first thing I should do? I need to go outside and I need to go put my tobacco down. I need to go pray on it. I need to go, you know, talk to my plant relatives outside. I need to like really center myself. And so I do wonder if that would be an acceptable way or starting point at a major media outlet of how to work. I'm not sure, but where I am now, I can bring my full self to my work, which I find really meaningful. And yeah, so that's kind of my short spiel on how I got to where I am.
I think it's fantastic. And I love that you're able to find a way to bring your whole self to your work. I mean, it's obviously successful for you. And I'm glad we're having a chance to learn and hear more about that perspective so that we can find ways to bring our whole selves to work, too. And maybe that is how we shift culture. And maybe that is how we shift organizations like this, by being to creating space for that. Hope, so you told me this story. And I feel like I just have to cozy up because I was so moved by it when you told us, you know, what brought you to your work. But you have to share it with everyone. How did you get on the path?
When I was 2 years old, it's my first memory of anything. My mom would teach me about plants. And I remember looking up, I was two and I looked up and she goes, "This is a wild carrot." And I remember looking at the side of a lake. And I didn't know what it was and what was laying there. And it was the yellow water lily root. And that root represents some of the, I mean, we talk about, I mentioned the word Atazucana, which is a living being, these living spirit protectors, but also the stories are considered Atazucana. So when I saw that, she told me, "Oh, that's yellow water lily root." I thought it was an animal, but it was actually a plant. And later to find out that, oh yes, it does represent characters in some of the legends, you know, like a particular character, one of the legends, that was a really powerful kind of like introduction of walking in this particular world. You say that all the time when you're talking in the language, Oma'aki, like being here on this earth at this time, because time is seen differently. And when you're talking in the language in Ojibwe, you'll hear that that everything is either alive or not alive. So you're constantly thinking about who are your fellow living beings. You can't talk about anything unless you think about it. Is it animate? Is it inanimate? The verbs are animate, inanimate. The nouns are animate, inanimate. And all the beginnings and parts of the words are about your relationship to that being. So I know we've had two astrophysicists come to us and say, Ojibwe is a better lens to look through life for understanding physics than English is. So I believe that's absolutely true. So when you kind of turn on that language, that way of seeing the world through different eyes, it is through language. I see it. I mean, I can see how you think differently. So here's a challenge too, is my mom was Seneca, but she would tell me go help those elders. Go help those elders. And a lot of times those elders would be Ojibwe. And so they would tell me, you've got to learn the language. You've got to learn Ojibwe because you're going to be hearing people talk and I want you to understand what's going on. So that's something that has been absolutely true. I've been fortunate to work in a Ojibwe immersion classroom for 10 years, but that was with little bitty ones, like 16 months to four-year-olds. So gosh, when you do that kind of work, you get exposed to so many different ways of being in the world with that beautiful, their closeness to the spirits brings in all this truth that you might miss if you're with people that are solidly just in this world with these glasses. So having different ways of being in the world and seeing the world is so beautifully put through language. And I want to thank Ruben and Bedote and Kevin Smoky Day and everybody else that is continuing to say, learn the language, learn the language, learn the language, because you have then a different way of understanding the world. I want to put one more big thank you is Ruben's auntie Becky believed in me when I couldn't believe in myself. And I was in a situation when I was young 20s where I didn't want to be on this earth anymore. And Becky believed in me and came to help me. That's that tribal way of being, that way you really take good care of each other. You don't look at who's smarter, who's better. No, we're all important. We all have gifts. Get that addiction of money and power out of the way and think about, we need every one of us. We need those stories that Leah's telling. We need that understanding of those strong, brave men like Ruben. You know, we need that. We can't just say, look at me, look at me, look at me. That's not going to help us.
As Indigenous people, you know, like as Leah was saying, like we're not a monolith. We're not this, you know, you can't say we're all these same things. Like, so as Hope was sharing, you know, there's like a protocol when you share stories and things like that. The Dakota, we don't have that. Knowledge is I don't even know what to call it, but it's our belief surrounding that, like it's different. So things are more public domain, you know. People will be like, oh, it's your birthright to know this story. I'll just tell it. And it may or may not have always been like that, but it is that way today for the Dakota people. But so I'm just saying, like we're all coming as ourselves and who taught us, and it could be different, you know, for each other. So there's all this, you know, things that are similar, but things that could be different among our people. You know, we live 40 miles away from each other, have totally different languages, not even the same sounds in our languages. You know, Bresha Oyate, Misquagami Wizaga Iganing, both of those mean Red Lake, and they totally do not sound in the same world. So, you know, I don't know. So basically I love the diversity and like the actual, things that make our people different, you know. Today we might look at it in a certain way where, and then like some of us might believe these, white narratives that, put us against each other, but, there's way more love that was between our people than, anything. So anyway, I'm pointing out differences, but, like there's a lot of love between our people. So I just wanted to highlight and say, speak to that. And then, so like one of the parallels though, that I was mainly speaking to is that, there's like a Dakota story, like a really long story that I'm probably not going to get into, but basically it tells that your gift, you know, like basically your, to the Dakota, I guess our spiritual way of our way of life is like your one thing. In school, you're taught to be like good at seven things. How are you supposed to be good at gym, math, history, English, blah, 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 second language like Spanish or something? How are you supposed to be great at all those things? And our original ways of thinking, you're supposed to be good at one thing. It's your gift. Like if you're the moccasin maker, then that's your gift and that's what you share with your people. If you're the storyteller, that is your one thing you master and then you give it to your people. If you know the plant knowledge, the star knowledge, like so it's like for our people and like what we knew before, a lot of it comes to sharing your gifts, you know.
So we have a few minutes left, and in the few minutes we have, I really want to make sure that I ask this question, because I'm a firm believer that it's not enough to take in information. I love for the information to be able to moved forward. If someone is listening and they've been motivated by this, I want them to be able to take it and expand on their knowledge or expand on their work or take action in some sort of a way. So it's a bit of a two-part question. I want to know, how can we shift our current way of thinking if we're just thinking from a very sort of closed perspective? And as we're making that shift, how can we get more involved in creating a more successful, sustainable future for everyone? I'm going to start with hope.
How can we get more involved? I got a call from a friend of mine yesterday that just thrilled me. She works for Native News Online, and she mentioned that she was asking, you know, like, what can I do? What can I do to be helpful for the communities, you know? And it ends up being that when you're helpful for one, it usually is like a stone in water, you know, it ripples out, ripples out, ripples out, remembering that all of us are together, you know, that we're all in this together. I'm in this, you're in this, that deer outside yesterday, that deer is in this. We're all, as living beings, in this together. So she tells me this story that she went forward thinking, I'm going to let go of my expectations. I'm going to let go of my ego, and I'm going to trust and start thinking about spirituality. What is this really all about? Why am I really here? So then this thing happens. She goes to this restaurant at White Mountain Apache, and she meets someone that I worked with last year. And they start talking about, what can you do to find your direction? How do you find your direction? And so they started to put these things into place, or it's like, you've got to trust, you've got to listen, you've got to be in tune with that sense of guidance, like however you define it. Doesn't matter to me how you define it, but to me, if you can start getting away from what in this society we say is success, or in what this society we say is whoever dies with the most toys wins. We know that's not true. We've seen it over and over again. We've got to make sure we find out what is true success. So maybe rethinking some of those and looking at how do we best help each other, not just, you know, like all of us together. So looking at that true connectivity, that we're all connected, and how do we lift that up and live it out?
Absolutely. Leah?
I think first is in order to, you know, start shifting the way we think, I think it's really helpful to listen to our Indigenous relatives on this land. So including those Indigenous values and perspectives at the table, like I mentioned, increasing the diversity of the thought processes that you're hearing, and applying you know, Indigenous values, you know, whatever they might be, whoever's talking for that person, like, and asking what would healthcare look like if we recognized one another's spirits and the spirit of our animal and plant relatives? What would law enforcement, education, government look like if we valued one another's spirits like that? And then as to what Hope mentioned is the definition of success. Like, our definition of success would be different as far as actual things to do. I would check out Native media outlets. So there are tribal radio stations in Minnesota. I believe most have web streams. There is great information from Illuminative about changing Native narratives and reclaiming Native truth. There's actual resources at research in their resources, and that's Illuminatives. And there's also local stations that have Native hosts. There's public television programs. Just really expand outside the usual suspects of major media outlets, I think, would be beneficial to expand in that diversity.
I think that's a great suggestion, Ruben.
Oh, and other podcasts too, like All My Relations and Toasted Sister and those.
I was going to say, and mind you, I'm a podcaster, so I should know to make sure a podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that. Ruben.
the main thing that I think about is, you know, just don't stand in our way. Say Bede Makaska and not Lake Calhoun. Try to like, you know, say things properly, or, you know, and then if you don't know, ask. And then I want to say to my own people, Brehicha God Dayanuchan, like, take courage, be courageous, and go learn. You're gonna try to say something to someone, and they're gonna laugh at you because you said it wrong, and then they're gonna correct you in a good way, and then you'll remember, you know. I don't know, if people are afraid to make mistakes, that's why they don't try. And I think that we need to get rid of that fear. And you know, our people, you know, we've been through so many things. And I feel like when people talk about trauma or whatever, they don't think about, I think that it's like dysfunction. It's like our people, it's so when their language was taken from them and their culture was taken from them, their way of thinking and like taking care of themselves was taken from them. So to me, it's like, our people are ashamed that they can't speak Dakota. Our people are ashamed that they can't speak Anishinaabe Mawin. And it's like, we gotta like stop wearing that, take it off, take courage, and just go learn it.
Thank you, Ruben. I would like to give Hope the last word, because as we end our session today and we have learned so much, there's something that sits with me, and she says it so beautifully. There's a term in your language that means thank you. Can you explain to us why, when you use it when you use it in conversation and when you use it at the end of an interaction, why it really holds a different weight?
Sure. You'll hear it all the time. This is a land of many miigweches, you know, and normally that would be many thank yous. Now, I was in this course of the history of the Ojibwe language, and they were talking back and forth about different people that had spoken about the language. And we had heard that term miigwech is fairly recent, and mi is a pointer word. It means that right there. And then gwich would mean that it was used during the fur trade. So that was enough furs. That was enough. So you'd say, mi gwich, that's enough. That was one of the things I was taught, that miigwech means that's enough. So every day when you do your thank yous, and you'll hear that all the time about do your daily thank yous for breath and life and water and all these beautiful gifts that, you know, that we have every day just to live another day. So when you're doing your miigweches, you think about to the Creator, you all have been so generous to us. The spirits have been so generous. The Creator has been so generous that I have this beautiful world that I get to walk in. I have the breath that I need today. I have the water that I need today. I have a place to sleep today. That's enough. You've given so generously. You don't have to live in a mindset of want. So when you say your thank yous, you're recognizing that so much has been given so generously from the unseen world.
Well, I have to say, so much has been given generously today from your words and the ideas that you shared. And I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you so much for giving your time and your energy today. I want to make sure that we say thank you to our participants today, Hope Flanagan and Leah Lem and Ruben Keto Stately. Thank you so much for your wise words and for sharing with us. We also want to make sure we have a special thank you to We Are Still Here for their support in creating this program today. Thank you for the audience for tuning in, and thank you for letting me be here. Hope everyone has a great day.